Thanks for being here. Discovery process. This is, I mean, if we kind of think about where we're at in the life cycle of the relationship, this is that bottom of funnel, getting them out of the funnel into our home, into the advisory firm. So Tiff and I want to talk a little bit more about our respective processes that we have in our firm, what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing throughout this process, because at the end of the day, what we're doing is building further trust with the relationship. Obviously, you've built enough trust equity up until this point with them to inquire about doing business with you. But for lack of a better word, this is the close. This is the sales process. So, or the sales process conversation. So here we go. All right. As Allison mentioned, this is CFP approved. So scan the QR code. Obviously, the information that you can see in front of you is what you will need to do. And I don't know that we have any Canadian advisors, but it is for CFP in the US alone. Questions about any logistical housekeeping issues with scanning the QR code?
I don't know how I feel about us leaving out Canadians. Yeah,
talk
right.
To not in my job description. So take that up with someone else.
People of the North are real upset right now.
We've talked previously about the no stress prospect process. We know that the entire time what we're doing here is that we are simply educating and informing someone about what they can expect if they become a client of our firm. And the way in which we do that is we simply want to deleverage the relationship. We want to educate and inform and demonstrate value rather than just saying, hey, do you want to sign up and pay us for something that is arguably the most abstract and intangible thing? Financial planning, financial peace of mind, financial independence, whatever that might be. So the no stress prospect process is that process that we collectively use to do that. The thing that I've learned through this process, curious to hear what your thoughts are on this, Tiff, is that this for me has been, I've gone through iterations of this process. And what I have found is that the more narrow and clearly defined my ideal client is, and the more educated they are about who I/we as a firm are, what we do, our philosophy on planning, our approach to planning, the easier it is to have them get to the point where they're essentially reaching out and asking us, not, hey, so we're thinking about doing business with you. It's, you know, no, we've read the stuff, we've listened to the stuff, we know your approach, we know your stance, we have these problems. You've done a half a dozen podcasts on this exact problem, but that doesn't apply directly to us. So you've demonstrated competence and expertise. Help us solve this problem. So it's not a, hey, we're thinking about hiring you. It's what's the next best step? And so we have found a direct correlation or indirect correlation, excuse me, between the more we educate, the less we have to do on the sales cycle. I'm assuming it's an iteration of that for you as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we don't have the same level of education and reach that you have found in the podcast. But it definitely, for me, it's almost like having a client service tier, like in asking those questions about where they're at up front in that introduction call. Like, I recognize the fact that the journey of those that are already familiar with us, where they're coming in from and how warm it is a very different onboarding than those that were maybe just given a name or researched us and found us or those types of things. It's much colder and it's a very different like onboarding and most likely series of questions that I'm asking up front just to get ready to go. And oftentimes it's a difference of at least one meeting.
Yes.
For those that are ready, we could probably take it down to two meetings. And for those that aren't, it's at least the three
meetings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right. This is the entirety of the process. The context of our conversation here today is, yeah, you can see it kind of bolded and highlighted there. We're talking about the third meeting. We're talking about the discovery conversation today. So that is like, that's the high level process, which again, should not, hopefully is not a foreign concept to everybody here. Today, we want to take that deeper dive into what that discovery process actually entails, how we embrace it, the philosophy and approach, some of the questions that we like, the questions that we don't like, or that we've seen used that don't work, right? What are the common barriers? It's lack of awareness, the perceived high cost, right? Cost is only apparent in the absence of value. So what we want to do through this process, again, you'll hear me say that over and over and over again. Educate and inform, educate and inform. If someone doesn't say yes, it's because, or if they say maybe, it's either because A, they maybe feel bad about telling you their face, so it's okay to give them permission to say no to you, or they have additional questions. And so this process is meant to answer all of their questions. Can they trust you? Alleviating the fear of that they're going to lose control, that they're just going to hand over their entire financial life. So you're managing and setting expectations about who's going to do what and when they're going to do that over the course of the relationship. How complex is this process going to be? We want to distill that down, right? What's that phrase? What's that quote? I think it's, is it Oliver Wendell Holmes? I wouldn't give a fig to be on this side of complexity, but I'd give my life to be on the other side, or find simplicity on the other side of complexity. Totally butchered that phrase. But the idea here is that we want to take people and distill down the complexity, the fear, the overwhelm of personal finance, and do it in a way that they understand. Speaking to them, removing, I'm getting ahead of myself here a little bit. Jargon is a huge red flag and no-no for me. And one of, again, getting ahead of myself a little bit, but finding out what their previous experience is. Are they coming to you as a blank canvas, never having had a conversation with an advisor before? Or are they coming up to you and meeting with you with their guard up because they've had three terrible experiences with XYZ advisor at ABC firm? Where are you meeting them in their overall lifetime journey? Anything that you would add to that?
What I like about thinking about the common barriers of what they're coming in is thinking about what we need to solve for in a very short period of time and attention and window that we get with our prospects. And this also very much highlights, like, if we just go in and do our spiel, like we could be missing on these six areas. So there's such an importance of uncovering and asking those questions, like ask and listen to understand, like, where are they at on this journey? Cause that'll dictate your prospect process and your meetings quite a bit. Like, you'll know, like, through the, are we going in an education route? Are they looking for a higher technical level of experience? Are they looking for that relational experience? It's probably a combination of both, but, like, you know, falling on one side versus the other will dictate a little bit about how you're going to be approaching those meetings, because your goal is to get them to the yes. The onboarding really solidifies each piece of this and helps unwind some of these things and get them to a place fully there, but you only have a specific amount of time. So really looking at these six things and thinking through, like, how am I uncovering that in the initial call and in that discovery meeting, so that I can then really format how we're going to have these conversations to get them to a place of, like, I feel really good about making this investment today.
And the only way that you can do that is through asking really good questions, mm-hmm. right? An advisor, I really enjoyed the book. It's called Selling to Serving by Luca Serra. He's a life insurance focused, if you will, advisor. But one of the phrases that I remember learning and hearing from him is that the mark of a great advisor is not in the quality of the advice that you give, but the questions that you ask. And it's not what we do that has the impact. It's what the clients are empowered to do because we're in their life. And to Tiffany's point, in the very, very, very finite amount of time that we have with them in a one-on-one capacity early on in that relationship, it is better to show up and be the best first-rate version of yourself rather than a second-rate version of someone else. And the best way that you can show up and be yourself is to be genuinely interested in why they are there. We can't do that if we do the thing that we want to do, which is just talk about ourselves mm-hmm. and how awesome our firm is and our process and our expertise, et cetera. So, like, the classic sales phrase that we've all probably heard, we have two ears, one mouth, use them appropriately in a conversation or in proportion in a conversation. Ask good questions, which is what we're going to get into here as we go through this.
Yeah, like, you're basically hitting that too. Yeah. and this is really good to just check yourself, because in these meetings, there's a lot that can come up to it for us in prospect meetings, right? For our own internal beliefs about ourselves, our worth, our ego can flare. Like, each one of those pieces, like, we're just so excited. We know we can help them. We want to tell them our story. So you can really do, like, a quick check with yourself. yourself? Are you tied to the outcome? I have experienced this a couple of times, but I recognize the fact that like when we're not on track to hit our forecasting and how all of a sudden each prospect meeting becomes like even that much more important. I remember starting my career and every dollar mattered. Like that meant like shoes for my kids and like those types of things. And I was like, man, I need to nail this for me. And that's the wrong place for an advisor to be. I needed to give them the information to make the best decision for themselves. So really understanding, and the way in which you'll show up in that meeting shifts when it's about them and not tied to the outcome, that you are fine no matter what you do. The goal is to get them the information so that they can make the very best decision for themselves. Do you find yourself talking more than listening? I reflect after every meeting, and I can tell the ones which we ask the good questions up front that had rolling good questions versus the ones where I'm like, oh man, I think we just had like 75% of that meeting. And the funny part of that is there's correlations on that. Like they asked for some like examples. It's because we verbally talked about stuff and went all over the place versus just asking the questions and honing in on what would have gotten them to the next best step to say yes. Excessive self-promotion, just really in there and like, oh, you got to learn this about this or here. Yeah, we do that here. We have this process. We do that. It's, you will feel all of those pieces. And then of course, pushing for quick decisions. One of the best things that we had implemented is that think about it or reflect on it or sleep on it or whatever you want to call it. We tell them this is going to be an incredibly important decision for you. Like we recognize the trust that you're going to be placing in whoever you decide to become your appropriate team. And we're looking to have a very long lifetime type of relationship because the value continues to go up over the years. And so we want to make sure that you have answered all the questions that you need to make that decision. And that really starts slowing that down. And then it's about them. That quick decision, that's about us. If we're pushing for it, because we should give people the time, right? And if we're feeling that, that's because that has a meaning that's tied to us in some way. And we just want to make sure that we're checking ourselves on that. People can smell it, they can feel it, they experience it, and your body just doesn't allow you to do anything different than come out with that self-promotion if you're connected to it and it's about you in any way. So if you're experiencing that, just reflect and pay attention so that you can make the shifts, because the opportunities come from the other side. When you hear them, you ask good questions, you can pinpoint, simplify, clarify, and then help them understand a very easy next step in choosing you.
Couple of things that that I would add on top of that to what Tiff had mentioned. I say in the very beginning, this is not something that we're gonna, you know, we are not rushing into this decision. Having said that, because we want to make sure that you're making the right decision, our goal is that this is your last first meeting. We're in this for the long haul as an advisory firm. So we're setting expectations that we don't do transient work, we don't do project-based work, we don't just want to be a fee for service or an hourly project-based advisor. We're in this for the long haul. And so we want this, from your perspective, to be the last first meeting that you have with an advisory firm. And through that process, on the other hand of that, while we don't want to give them the sense of urgency, what I will say at the end of the discovery conversation is, in the spirit of progress and accountability, when would you want to be making the next best step in this decision-making process? Oh, we got a lot on the plate right now, Adam. New EHR system, new team member, new doctor that's just coming forward. I would say probably in the next 2 months. Great. Would it be okay if I put a tickler on my calendar, reach back out to you if we haven't heard from you in 2 months to see if you have any more further questions about our process and about whether we're a good fit to serve you? So, right, that permission, we're giving them the control over the process, but it's in common alignment with both of our intentions. They want answers. We're running a business. It's okay. It's not a zero-sum game. It's not, in order for our business to win, we have to sell them on closing and doing that soon. Mm-hmm. So I like that of just that framing of this. I want this to be your last time having a first meeting with an advisor. I also like the permission-based close at the end of that first conversation, so that they're telling us when they're wanting to make a decision. That takes the ambiguity and the guessing game out of that. One little piece of tech that we've been using to better capture some notes and some data, and we've anecdotally, just accidentally, that's what I was looking for, found some data is using Fireflies as our note taker for client meetings and for prospect meetings. And it gives you the percentage of talk time in your meetings. I talk to, shocker, right? In a couple of meetings, I've spent too much time talking. So it gives you some of that data. The other part that I like about, let me see, there was something else. I should have had my notes up because as you were talking, there were 4 points that I wanted to emphasize on. What's that? I am doing it without notes, but stop talking. Our stage. Maybe it'll come back to me. Yeah, let's just move on. Why is discovery so important? Right. Again, we've iterated on this, or we've addressed this already. It's just a matter of us understanding how we can help them. This is about them. It's not about us. We want to ask those really good questions. We're building the foundation for a strong client relationship. Alignment and intention, alignment of expectations. That's simply what we're doing to determine, are they going to be a good fit? The last thing that we would want to do as an advisory firm, and the last thing that we'd want for them, is to rush into a decision without fully understanding. And this can happen if you have a referral from a really good client or a really good COI, and you're like, skip the process. Yeah, just bring them on board because they came from our A plus client. If I've learned, again, one of the many things, trust the process, don't shortcut the process. Everybody gets that opportunity to go through it because you are determining and setting expectations in the relationship. And in the absence of you setting the expectations, someone else will. And very few times are those expectations just accidentally going to line up. So really, really important in that.
The other thing that's important about that.
Hold that thought real quick.
The other thing that's important about that is that new person knows
how you're going to then treat potentially a referral from them if you do everything the same.
Yep.
So if you shortcut somebody, they might, you know, may not refer you because they didn't get the full experience.
They didn't get the full experience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've had that. I'm sure you've had the same thing where one of the positive pieces of feedback that we've gotten from relationships is, we love that you have a process. We love that we know what to expect through this timeline and through this journey, that it's not just like, so what's next here? Like, there's that collateral that goes out. There's the, on the website, the email confirmations that they get for the triage call, our discovery call, outlining that process, the follow-up email that goes out over talking about our fee schedule and service model and next steps, right? They are in abundant clarity about where they are at in the process and what the next step is going to be and when that's going to happen. Let's see, the objectives, right? We certainly want to communicate what we're going to offer, most equally importantly, what we will do and what we won't do for them. So again, back to those conversations of asking and understanding, why are they here? What's the biggest question that they have, that they have a concern about? That's why we like harvesting that data on the client intake form, on the prospective client intake form when they book through Acuity, is we ask them, what is the primary concern? If someone puts in that student loan repayment schedule, it's like, okay, that's a conversation with John. John, I got this solo. You don't have to be on this one because it's probably not going to be a good fit for our firm. We'll still have that conversation. We will still do a triage call with anybody that gets referred to the firm, anybody that books that call, because with our niche and with anybody that has a niche, they are big, small sandboxes. And so we certainly don't want to discount that if someone has taken the time and put themselves out there to schedule a call with us. We certainly want to be respectful of that and give them as much information and guidance as we can, while also understanding whether or not they're going to be a good fit for our firm. As Tiff and I have already mentioned, it is a very client-centric approach. By doing that, I know it might seem counterintuitive, but the more you make it about them, the easier it is to succeed in what we're talking about and end up growing your client base. Fees and compensation is obviously something that can be very different for different firms. Some choose to mitigate that by just posting it directly on a website and being very transparent with their fee schedule on the website. We choose to not do that. We want to put context around that fee schedule. So the closest that we will, I'm the one that quotes the fee schedule. When Kathy makes the outbound call to a prospective client within 24 hours after booking a triage call, and if they talk about fees, A, Kathy gives a range, so she doesn't quote the exact fee schedule. She will say that our typically our advisory planning fees are between X and Y. Adam and John will make sure to cover that in detail based off of your conversation, and she'll note that in red tail so that we know when we're prepping for that call. Hey, this was a fee conscious person. They have questions about it. Head trash immediately pops in. They're like, oh, they're going to talk about fees. And it's like, no, they just have questions about it. And they just want to know what it's going to cost and what they're going to get out of that. And by doing and understanding the prospective client's objectives, we're solving for our objectives.
Yeah. And I think the big thing there is the prospect the entire time is, do I trust this person? And what has been come around to verify that? Like, do I trust them to manage my net worth? Do I trust them for advice? Do I just trust them humanly, right? So there, and how is that being verified through expertise, verified through approach, questions that being asked, like my needs are going to be met. I can trust that they're going to be met. They have a very clear process in how that's going to be met. I understand it. They're not talking, you know, they're not talking at me. They're having a conversation with me. So the entire time is, do I trust this person to help me make all of these decisions in life? So that is what they're coming for. And then are we best to serve? Like everything that I'm uncovering is like, can we hit what their needs are? Do we have a process that will support that in a really meaningful way? Can all of the promises that we're making as a firm be fulfilled? And is there going to be an appropriate measuring stick? Now, sometimes it's occasional surprise, right? Or you have people who they're coming in on financial planning, and the moment that you then maybe the fee conversation comes up, it's performance, right? Investment performance matters the entire time. And you're like, wow, like, let's make sure that we're coming back around to like, what makes this a really successful relationship, and can we both get there, and are we going to be best to serve? Because again, that long-term relationship is where the value drives for everybody. So we're really looking to make sure that we're connecting on that upfront. Yeah. But establishing trust is the big piece here in ensuring that like every piece of this discovery process is they're verifying that. Do I trust you? Do I trust you enough to hand over the most important thing that's going to support my life and my family and our energy and our time? And so you want to make sure that that's built in a really meaningful way.
And indirectly related to this conversation, this goes back to why I would encourage every one of you to be unapologetic when you're putting yourself out there in the public about the convictions that you have, your position on planning, where you stand, your planning approach, your investment philosophy. Like the more that you can put out there so that they know what they're getting as much as possible, high level, right? They don't know exactly how it applies to them. That's why they're reaching out. But if investment performance, if you pontificate, for lack of a better word, in that we buy as much of the market as we possibly can and we let markets work, right? We manage taxes appropriately, but we don't try and time the market, blah, 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 blah. Well, by doing that, you're automatically disqualifying anybody that might chase market performance. But if you're ambiguous about that and you kind of dance that line of saying, again, I don't know how to articulate that, but right, be convicted in how you're positioning yourself in the public, because the more they can know about you, that to what Tiff was talking about directly relates to how much trust they're already building when they come to you, and makes that whole process that much easier. On the other side of that, if they know absolutely nothing about you, well, you're probably not getting a call, but right, maybe not absolutely nothing, but if that trust bucket is that much lower, they're spending much more of this time and you're having this dance in a conversation and relationship much more, which is what can take longer and longer throughout that discovery process. So that's why I love being as transparent and gracious and generous with information, because information is readily available. Knowledge is, how does the information that's out there, how does this apply to the type of client that we might work with? They're coming to you for wisdom, which is, okay, how do I take this information that you've been talking about, and how do I make the right decision the first time based off of my circumstances? That's the wisdom that you bring to the relationship, and that collectively as a team, you and the client can build off of. That's what they're solving for in this part of the relationship. preparing for discovery. This is, again, where I'm a big fan, right? One of my favorite Tim Ferriss quotes, never delegate something that you can automate, never automate something that you should eliminate. So from a gathering standpoint, how do we use tech and automation to communicate that process? If you attended my session yesterday, where we kind of that show and tell version of the prospect process, we're using Acuity, we're using Active Campaign as a way to promote and position ourselves and warm up that relationship. And then through the email confirmations that we're sending out prior to the triage call through Acuity, we're setting expectations. I brought our conversation from Park City up in, what was that, 2020 or 2021, of eliminating the eyes and my's, where we want to set as early on in the experience that you may have come because of me, but you're working with us. So the first sentence of the email confirmation that they get a week before our triage call is the last time they ever see I or my in an email. Every single point of contact that reference, or every single point from our firm is mentioning, we are excited to meet with you. It's our privilege to share in this conversation. We're so happy that you're sharing your time with us. I love that that framing. Like, we just eliminated the eyes and minds. I'm like, that's brilliant.
Yeah. It was important as a team too, because it's part of what we're offering. Like, it's a differentiator. Like, we're out there as a team and not as an individual. We don't want you to, we feel like it's a part of our responsibility to offer this broad bench of talent that we have, and the we's and the us's really help solidify that every single time. And it's also a nod to our team, right? Like, there's not one hero on our team ever. Like, we operate as a team. We all help each other. Our clients' success is because we all come together for that. And so it was a really important little step that we put in place. And it helped big time. We're not quite where Adam is on the automation of things. That is the next level of just having really pinned down our prospect process, but I have it in like Outlook, right? I have my scripts that are like, the moment I have this meeting, then this script goes out. That's like, here are those next steps. Here's what we discussed, you know, here's what's, and we hit them. And so it's still a very consistent process. I can't wait until it's automated now that we have a really cool system to do that. And just create an even better experience, ensure calendars are good and all of those things. But using the tech and automation helps so much in that prospect process, especially from the consistency perspective. Sometimes when we're in this space for discovery, and we're learning a lot, it's okay to learn a lot and continue to refine, but this process could literally be refined over and over and over and over and over again with every new prospect. And so there is a point of just be like, trusting the process and getting to a place of like, it's going to be this, and we know exactly what types of things we need to answer for the next one. Anything else that needs to, we can either, they can come in and ask those questions, or we know it gets answered in that next meeting. Like, the process works. But capturing what's top of mind for them. So one of my favorite questions is, what do you need to know, or what do you need to learn today in order to make a really good decision for yourself? Or what do you need to learn today for this meeting to be incredibly valuable to you? And a lot of times that pinpoints like exactly what they need to learn in order to make a decision. And that guides us really quickly into what are we going to be focusing in on that meeting. I have everything prepared from like, if we need to go through process, or we need to understand all the services that are being offered or anything like that. But if all they need to learn that day is something more about the relationship, or if it's pinpointed to like a certain thing, like my biggest thing is this, then we're going to make sure that they're spending time there, because that is what they just said they needed in order to make a decision, or that's going to get them to the next best place. So that's a really important question. I know like Tanya phrases it as like, what has your attention? I've shifted from that. I think that's a good one, maybe even more so in client experience, but in a prospect process, it's like, what do you need to learn or know to feel really good about making a decision? Or what do you need to know about your advisor in order to feel like you can trust them in this process? Or, you know, those types of questions.
I remember my other point that I wanted to make from a couple slides ago. Cool. So one of my favorite questions is, and it's so basic, but it just gets so much out, is tell me a little bit more about that. Right? If someone says something, and you might genuinely have more questions about that, but even if you don't, if you want them to get a little bit more deeper on that, that's so interesting, Melissa. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Tell me more. Yeah. Okay. Tell me more. I mean, it's such a simple question, but it allows them to peel back the layers, because sometimes, to Tiff's point, in this trust building relationship, that guard might still be up a little bit more, and they might not feel either feel comfortable, or again, through the alignment of expectations, they might think that they've told you all that you want to know until you probe deeper. Now, I think there is a point where, like, you might not ask that four different times in a row. Like, you could get annoying with that, but gauge the room, right? Gauge the conversation, the temperature of the conversation. But that is one of my favorite questions to ask. Oh, that's interesting. Tell me a little bit more about that. The question that we use on our intake form, again, this just helps us collectively as a team, Kathy, and I'll talk about that here briefly on the human touch. What is your biggest financial concern that you're looking to have solved? Like, what is top of mind? Or I think it's, what is top of mind for you? What is your top financial concern? It's on our discovery panel. It's on our acuity form when they schedule the call. And that is the script that Kathy will use, or excuse me, that's the foundation that Kathy will use when she makes her outbound call, which is triggered by a workflow in Redtail, which is automatically kicked off when they book the triage call because a contact is added to Redtail. There's a two-part automation that's built in that. Talked about that yesterday during the show, not tell. If you're interested to see how all of that worked, rather than going down that rabbit hole in this session, I would tell you to go watch the recording of that in Cvent or in a library after the session. But regardless, that trigger pops up on Kathy's to-do list 24 hours after the booking happens for two reasons. Number one, it is up until this point, they have had a completely asynchronous and digital experience with our firm. They've either been listening to the podcast, they've heard me speak, they've read something, they got a referral, whatever that might be, but they have been in control of the relationship and they really haven't had any interaction with our firm outside of the digital experience. Number two, the reason it's Kathy making that call is for two reasons. Number one, setting expectation that every single interaction going forward, she is going to be the first point of contact. It's not me, it's not John, it's not Kate. The first point of contact is going to be with Kathy. So we want to set that expectation up front that Kathy is the one that that's reaching out. Second reason for that is it allows Kathy to talk a little bit more about whatever their financial concern was, to either share, so glad that you called about selling your practices in 5 years. Adam and John have done that collectively for dozens of optometrists nationwide. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that? Because I know they're going to be excited to talk to you about that, right? She can fact find just a little bit more. She's not closing. She's not selling. She's just asking a couple of questions. She also, I don't know the exact data on this, but a handful of times I see in the workflow notes, LVM, she just left a voicemail. It's still a proactive outreach. It's still a human touch. Anything that you would add to that as far as what you do in DC?
No, I mean, right now we have it all centralized underneath me. So like as growth goes, so there is a level of like the ways in which we're building that to have marketing very and growth and prospecting very centralized. And then it moves into the advice and client experience model. So we shift a little bit of most of that starts with me, with the expectation of there will be a hand or a team handoff in the future. But you have my wheels spinning a little bit. And then knowing your prospect, and if you can, so like for our entrepreneur aligned, definitely I go and research them prior to coming in, because they're definitely going to be on LinkedIn. They're running a company most likely. Like I'm able to look up, what is their company? Where are they at? What are they doing? Who else are they connected with that I may know? Like, I want to be like armed with all of that. Retirees, less known, right? Like you might be able to find a picture with the grandkids or something along those lines. But if it came from a center of influence, I have that call before the meeting, if I can, just or email
with the COI.
What should we expect? Like where are they challenged? How did you identify this opportunity? Those types of questions. So if there is a personal introduction, the only time I don't do that is with clients. And the reason being is sometimes the prospect is like, this person referred me and the client didn't even know that they called, or it becomes a little awkward. So the nice thing about that is when we know that, that's just one of the questions up front in the, in that prospect or that intro call, right? Like, hey, you know, Mary and John, like, how do you guys know each other? Like, that's great. And just kind of relationship build that way. But I leave that to the prospect. But if you can get information, it's really helpful. It positions you in a much better way to have a more meaningful conversation, understand what they're coming in, be prepared for, and a little less on your toes in the meeting.
Yeah, it also helps. I mean, again, maybe a little bit more specific to our firm. I don't have to spend as much time. Oh, tell me a little bit about the practice. I can visit the practice website and mm-hmm. see. Oh, tell me, can you talk to me about if I read on the website that Dr. Smith took over the practice from Dr. Jones 5 years ago? I don't have to ask. So can you tell me about how long you've owned the practice? I can phrase that question. So I understand that you took over Dr. Jones's or whatever names I used in that example 5 years ago. Tell me a little bit about how that transition went. Right. You're just coming in. And the point of that is that I'm not having to waste the precious commodity of time in this conversation by finding things out that I could have found out on my own or that Kathy could have found out and just put in notes. We can focus that time on not building the backstory, but why are they here? What is it that we can solve? And how can we make this a good use of our time? Right. Their time is valuable as well. Even if they're retired, their time is valuable.
So we've prepped for the meeting. Now we're in the meeting.
Beginning, middle, and end, right? I'm a huge fan in the beginning of defining success, right? This just deleverages the relationship and reduces the opacity of that. Like, so what are we, okay, it's a 45-minute meeting. Like, what am I going to expect? So my, out of the gate, my phrasing, my scripting is, Dr. Smith, I understand as a practice owner, there is no shortage of items on your to-do list. Our intention in this call today is to make sure that you have clarity as to what your next best step is going to be to get answers to the question that you put into our intake form. If that, through the course of this conversation, means that you're better served having a conversation with someone else, we will absolutely do what we can to facilitate a conversation and introduction with whoever can help. If it means having a conversation further with our firm about how we can serve you, we'll absolutely let you know what those next steps are going to be. But we want to make sure that you have progress to your next best step. There's no awkward, like they know that's all we're doing. So they're not going through this entire 45 minutes thinking in the back of their mind, like, when's the sale? When's the close? When's the you know, hammer drop? It's like, no, all we care about is getting you to your next best step, whether it's with us or someone else. The middle is just, if we think of the sandwich here, right? The bread is that beginning, the meat of that sandwich is what we've been talking about up until this point. Asking good quality questions, asking very basic follow-up questions of, tell me a little bit more about that, focusing on them and not us. I am a big fan. I've been using it for a couple of years, right? The R question from Dan in Strategic Coach. You know, if we think back on this, if we're 18, 24 months from now, what has to happen in this relationship for you to make it feel like this, it was a good investment of time and energy, right? Have them define success. I think that's the more intangible and feeling based the relationship and the service that we have is, the more important I think that question is. So if we're selling big screen TVs, it's pretty easy to define what defines success in that relationship. It works or it doesn't. It solved my problem or it doesn't. In financial planning, wealth management, investment management, there's a lot more ambiguity that can happen in the course of that relationship. So, right, I mentioned this earlier on the end of that, defining that timeline, that's where I'll say, you know, and we used to do this in the one-page plan. When I would set expectations in the one-page plan presentation, I would say, at the end, all we're going to do is set a follow-up call. There's not going to be an awkward pause where, so what do you think? Right. I would kind of joke about it. I would set expectations that the only action that we're going to take is when we can have a follow-up conversation. The variation of that now is, like I had said earlier, in an ideal situation, based off what you know and where you're at right now, what type of timeline would you be looking at to make the next best decision in this process? Oh, you're definitely going to hear with us in the next 2 weeks. Okay, great. If we haven't heard from you in 2 weeks, would it be okay, right? Permission-based selling, permission-based marketing. Would it be okay if I put a note on my calendar to follow up with you to see if you have any further questions? Oh, yeah. And what we usually hear from, the response that we usually get from that is, yeah, that's fine, but you hear from us before that. So, that's my essentially beginning, middle, and end. anything that you would add to that?
We follow a very similar structure. Yeah. Like, just let them know that there is a process, that they're not in a seat to make a decision today. Let them know when a decision point is coming so that they feel good about what information that they're gathering, and just, you know, de-risk it. Like, we're here to help you, and we're going to help you take that next best step, whether it's with us or not with us. Yeah, definitely reaffirming what we heard, what they said. So after asking all those questions, just clarifying, like, this is what I heard, would you agree? Because there are times where they are just hitting so much and you're like, okay, did I hit all of these? And did I say it in a way that really resonates with them? Because we're going to utilize that heavily in this next piece, that next meeting. So we definitely want to make sure that we have that right. Is there anything more that you would like to add to that? You know, and that's a really important question too, because almost I would say like 9 out of 10 times there's something missing.
Something else.
Yeah. That has, like, they were just in a place of sharing and it was just trying to get to a place that they could organize and get all of that out to you. Yeah. And then of course ending, like, here's that next step as we previously discussed. And
I think on that last point that I'll make on this slide is under the topic of determining the next decision step, give them permission to say no. Let them know that it's okay. Like, look, we realize that we're not the best firm for every OD and we're okay with that. And we want you to know that if you feel like this isn't the right fit, you're not going to hurt our feelings. Please feel comfortable letting us know. It's that maybe that gets us, right? That's, I make a joke about it in that conversation. Don't drag this out.
Yeah.
Question?
Nobody likes limbo.
Just curious, during that meeting, you know, there's a lot to talk about. How much do you focus on, you know, count values or nitty gritty things versus, hey, we can get those later during your discovery calls?
From my perspective, I don't care about it because we charge for financial planning and investment management separate. And from a business model standpoint, the financial planning is, dare I say, all we need. The investment management is largely just the cherry and whipped cream on top of the sundae. So because our clients are all across the board, some of them have never opened an investment account, but they're cash flowing 25 grand a month that they could invest. So they're like, that's why they're here, is like, I've heard your podcast, like, I need to start investing. I just don't know where to start, but we've got the cash flow. And then there are others that have a couple million bucks that are like, so we don't talk about that at that time. We do outline it in the process when I quote, or when I quote, when we talk about the fee schedule and we talk about the service model, I'll get into and emphasize, we have one entire meeting focused around the investment management process, philosophy, and approach. And that's when we'll gather that data.
For us, for Entrepreneur Aligned, we don't worry about it as much. It's a flat fee model and it could be based, so it, through their businesses and stuff like that, it can work from a Destiny Capital side and focusing in on the retirees. I ask it in, it's like it has these tiers, but if I already know it from a COI or the ways in which the introduction came in, then I don't need to ask because I know that they're qualified or not. Where it's totally ambiguous and I maybe don't know, then I will have that conversation. So I'm going to just gather a little bit about your financial structure just to make sure, like, tell me a little bit about where you're at from like an asset perspective, a liability. It's very high level and it's disarming. Just, I'm not looking for you to have exact numbers. Nobody has to log into statements or anything along those lines, but just like to have an idea. And that helps. And it's no problem to gather that. But I need to know that from a qualification perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay. While you're walking up, Allison, do we have any virtual questions?
Not yet.
Okay.
So I guess the way I understand it, Adam, you've gotten rid of kind of that next one page plan meeting.
Correct.
In your process. But Tiffany, if you're doing that, when are you quoting the fee? Is it in that discovery meeting or later?
So it depends. So if it's in that like initial somewhat introductory call or anything like that, only if they ask. Otherwise, it's after that discovery and we're actually going into more like that deeper conversation of like the fact finding and all of those things, because by that point we've been able to understand where are their motivators, where are they challenged, we've been able to showcase value, and we want to make sure that they're super clear then on what that arrangement looks like to engage with us.
The discovery conversation for you is much more qualitative than it is quantitative.
Correct.
And then if there's alignment on the qualitative side of things, that's where you will then bridge the gap and start talking more about the quantitative mm-hmm. side of things, where eventually that fee schedule will come.
That relationship expectation. And kind
of reconcile that against whatever their financial circumstances are.
Right.
So that conversation at the end of the discovery meeting for you is a little different then? It's more, you know, here's our process. We'll schedule another time to.
Yeah, we'd love to schedule another meeting to now dive into more about, you know, more about like the things that we've identified today as major motivators or things that are super important to you. We'll share more about our process and what your expectations can be and the outcomes we can, you know, it can be very overwhelming to understand comprehensive financial planning. We go through it through our four pillars of financial success. You can clearly understand. And then we get to the fees at the end of that. So the next meeting is where we're outlining what's most important to them? What can they expect? And then what fees will they be charged?
Mm-hmm. Question for you. I'm going to totally throw you in a spot right here.
Yeah.
With the new work that you've been doing around your remarkable retirement, mm-hmm. do you bring that brand, that message, that philosophy into the discovery conversation?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. So our remarkable retirement and that roadmap, it's like we're getting to a place like we're really refining. So it's like interesting where I would be a year from now and having this piece of it, because like you start it on like the brand, the core messaging, and now like how are we redefining that process? Because part of it is in our last few, I haven't even collected financial documents at all.
They're
like
just ready to move forward.
Yeah, we have the introduction, and it's more about like, can you help me solve this? And we are going through, here's how we would help you solve this, but we're not actually having to create, like collect everything and create the plan. So beforehand, the process was, we have that qualifying call, the introduction, I'm collecting like 5 or 6 core pieces to then do an initial financial analysis and then talk through but in the hopes that I'm just adding that value. But what we found is for many people, like they didn't, it may take them down a rabbit hole, and now we're pinpointed on one specific thing versus the entire offering, right? Like they're seeing it. It's like, now I want to understand, can I buy this house and can I do this? I haven't seen my thing this way. And we're like, oh gosh, like this is getting us to a place versus like, I'm coming in because I'm in need of a relationship, financial advice and investment support, you know, and creating. And so it's like, okay, what are our core stories? What's the process and how do we help solve? Can they trust that? And then we'll get them in. And then they see the 6-month onboarding of how we're going to solve that in a way that is very simple and non-overwhelming. And so our last few, we haven't actually done the financial analysis. All documents are being collected after they sign the client agreement. We're then doing a full kickoff meeting that shows them their entire plan, but they're already committed and they're ready and it's in a really good place. So it's interesting to see how it's shifting a little bit from like truly just getting into storytelling, how we can solve those things. Like we have a clear process. Oh, we did this just like this. Here's how we would walk you through that. We have, and we can show them on a slide, like, here's our investment philosophy, you know, do you agree or don't you agree with it? But they don't necessarily need to see, well, here's exactly how my investments are going to be positioned with you. They just need to know what's our philosophy and strategy around that for them to make a decision. Is that it? And then know, and as a part of your onboarding, we have this investment meeting. It comes in right at this time frame. And that at that point is where we will go over exactly, once we can review your full statements and everything, does it make sense to convert everything immediately? Are we going to do it over a couple of years because of capital gains? Are we going to, you know, just each piece of that? And they're like, that's awesome. You know? And I was like, man, we've been collecting a lot of documents and doing financial plans ahead of them becoming clients for a long while. And it turns out, like most people, like for us right now on the Destiny Capital side, the retiree side, and on Entrepreneur Line, because they don't really know what to expect a ton of times with the wealth management and financial advisors, but is they just want to know that we can do it. And if we have a process that shows them how it's going to happen, they don't necessarily need to see how that's going to happen. Like we don't have to collect those documents yet. Plus it's so much smoother when we can collect all the documents and do it in one full scoop versus me collecting 5 of them and then it fully getting revamped again after we collect all the rest. So I don't know.
again, I think we've hit on a lot of this already throughout the course of the conversation, talking relatable plain language. Metaphors are great in small doses. Again, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt that we can all be decent judges of how often we are using those metaphors. I, as someone that loves metaphors, tries to use them in doses. The refrain from jargon, the asterisk that I would put next to that, do not use our financial jargon, use theirs as much as you can, right? This is through the idea of essentially the first and third check mark are kind of related. Talk in relatable plain language. The confirmation email that gets sent out 3 days before the triage call, I talk about our firm structure and what they can expect. Essentially, they're getting a front office person, an optician, and an optometrist, right? John's the optometrist, Kate's the optician, Kathy's the front office person. So I'm using jargon and I'm using a structure that they can relate with, which does two things, right? It establishes and builds on that trust, and it communicates that, hey, we understand your business model and understand what it is that you do on a day-to-day basis, which again, builds that trust. And it, again, just deleverages that relationship. Mistakes to avoid. One of the things, and we're just going through this process, like I in prep for this conversation, I took inventory of this last week when we were having a call with a mortgage broker because we're in the process of building right now and evaluating different mortgage lenders. And on this initial call, like essentially a discovery call with a mortgage person, every single thing that I said or that Andrea said, my wife said, the mortgage person would immediately shift conversation into, oh yeah, we did that too. And then she would bring another client situation into the relationship. And I think what she was trying to do is demonstrate experience and that she's been through this before, but she shifted it away from us. It was always about her and about a different client. And I think you can do that in moderation. Correct. Not together. Or like what we will say is if their primary concern is helping optometrists sell practices, now, Joe, that's great. We have helped dozens of other optometry practices sell their business and we've helped them avoid mistakes such as maybe one or two mistakes. And that's it. I'm not going to go on a 5-minute diatribe about this laundry list deep dive because they don't care about that. They care about themselves, right? And so just take that in moderation about the mistakes that that you might make. Do not judge a book by its cover, right? Just because someone says student loans is their primary concern, okay, that might be their primary concern, but what are the other things? So as I'm looking to manage resources, I don't want, John might not be involved in that conversation, but I'm still going to go into the conversation.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Lack empathy. Again, there's this trust piece there and they need to feel safe in asking you different questions. And we hear things all the time. And oftentimes we'd be like, okay, and we can somewhat just not have that moment or pause with them where it's like, this is truly something big in their life. And just because we see it 100 times doesn't mean that it's not equally as big. So you need to make sure that you're present to the empathy and that recognizing the one size doesn't fit all, right? Like you have those people that are coming in and they really want to know from a technical perspective that you're going to be it. You have the others that are really there from a relational perspective. You have them in different parts of their life. You may have a couple together. You may have a single person. Like none of that means that the exact way that you're doing it is going to work. So you just need to have those little pivots that are like, okay, when I uncover this, it still allows my process to work, but we're going to ask this question versus that question, this is going to be the pause point, and this is where that meeting ends and adds that secondary meeting because we just uncovered something that creates that shift. So just making sure there's a little flexibility and adaptiveness into your process, it works really well because not every single person is going to come in with the exact same needs at the exact same time with the exact same levels of importance. And so you just need to be able to uncover that and have a little flexibility in that process.
Yep. This is the outline of our discovery process that we have on the website. Again, as was mentioned, we have refined this down and we are very clear about who we do our best work with, what they can expect throughout that process. Implicitly what we're doing through this is we're telling who we don't do our best work with. And then the conversation, I'd like to say that I have this whole script and this whole outline of hitting this bullet point, this bullet point, this bullet point. But outside of the, like to use that sandwich metaphor again, outside of the pieces of bread, where I set expectations in the front end and I clearly define the next best step, the meat of that entire sandwich is focused around the answer to the question that they put in the triage call. What is the biggest financial concern that they're looking at solved? And everything goes from there. So there, it's just being present, being attentive, asking follow-up questions. That's what they care about, right? They don't care about our solutions. They care about their problems.
Here's kind of a sample of ours. I probably should have had you guys. Oh, there we go. Go to the website. We also have this as like a download or something that can come up as a follow-up, but it's the three steps. Like, it's a quick call to understand, like, are we best to serve each other? There's a piece of me that those are starting to go longer because people are willing to talk. And I've actually heard this from several advisors where it's like, it almost hits most of your discovery, which I think that's why that storytelling piece and that secondary meeting isn't needed for a one-page plan, because high level in that introductory call, we're getting so much from them. And if they're
just at 20 minutes.
Yeah. I'm like, do I just say like not just, yeah, it's probably closer to a 30 to 40 minute call and we're collecting everything, which then allows it to be a really highly effective retirement roadmap conversation. And then the think about it, I might change that to reflect on it. I don't know. I go back and forth. It doesn't matter. It just de-escalates the decision point of like, it'll come later. There's a process here and you don't have to make a decision until three. So give yourself the opportunity to learn and learn more about what could be a fit for yourself. And if we're not it, that's okay. Yep. We would be happy to get you in the right hands. But this process allows you to go through that and think about it in a really meaningful way and a very personalized way. That's our process. You can do it. I feel like everyone is pretty close to either two or three steps.
Yeah.
You don't want to probably go too much longer than that because that becomes overwhelming pretty quick. Like, who has the time commitment and all of those things. Maybe I keep the 20 minute calls and allow it to be 30 to 40, knowing I'm adding massive value. I don't know.
All right. Again, just to kind of tie a bow around this entire conversation, ensure that they are in control, like make them feel you're not being disingenuous. You are genuinely giving them the feeling that they have the control over the conversation, that they're clear on what the entire process is, what the next best steps. That you're having a relatable conversation. You're not talking over them, right? How many of us have had conversations with prospects? And one of the reasons that they're there is that while our previous advisor would just, we'd leave feeling more confused than we left. And I'd hear this from wives, like, I was never involved in the conversation. It was just the advisor talking to my husband. So understand why they're there. Make sure that there's alignment of expectations, the affirmation that they are in the right spot, that they made a good decision in investing the time. We all have busy to-do items, or we all have busy lives with lots of items on our to-do list. Reaffirm that they have taken a very important step. And we understand that the topic that they're talking to us about is one of, if not the most privileged and confidential topics. And we're so grateful to share in that relationship with them. Emphasize that, congratulate them, acknowledge them for that, be grateful for that opportunity, because it's rarefied air for us or for them to share that with us. So acknowledge that, because it's a big deal. Anything that you'd add to that?
Nope.
Cool.
We hit some Q&A.
We have some time. So yes, I think we violated CFP board by being, or maybe not violated, but we got extra credit, right? Because CFP board is 50 minutes. So we did, what's that? Oh, well, we can keep yakking. No. And Allison's giving me the nod. Like, no.
Cocktail.
Virtual folks, thank you for being here as well. Allison, do we have any questions from virtual? They're burnt out already, huh? All right. Any questions, comments, feedback?
One other.
The microphone, look at following the process.
It was a question from a little bit earlier. I was curious on your pre-meeting Google stalking. Mm-hmm. Like, what structures do you put around like that pre-meeting? Like, I feel like oftentimes when you're looking at like a practice's website or somebody's LinkedIn or this, that, and the other, there's 4 million directions you can go, and then you can find out that you spent 2 hours down a rabbit hole on it, right? So like, is there any structure that you put around that to be able to have like a really ways to connect, but also
respectful of the time, be efficient with it.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this is very specific to, you hit on the two things. I look at their LinkedIn profile and we look at their practice website. those two things will give us all that we need to know. Sometimes on LinkedIn profile, we'll find out that they've authored some peer review journals, or they do some consulting for Alcon or J&J. Or so we'll talk so how long have you been consulting with J&J? What's the nature of that? Really, you know, have you been involved in their contact lens developments? Like, again, just, but LinkedIn and the practice website are usually enough.
And on the website, I'm bio heavy. Like, I want to know about, like, if they have a biography, I want to know family, dog, hobbies. Are they sitting on a board? I feel like biographies give you most of everything that you would want, their history, their story, their expertise, their experience, yeah. Those types of things. And then the next piece, if I feel like I need to go any further than that, if they have news or events or something along those lines, I'm looking at like, what are the big things that are happening in their world, that they put out. I don't tend to follow like their content or that type of stuff, but I feel like biographies give like everything you would want, as a very good start if you just want to like get that down to like 5 minutes.